This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. After a history-making delay, it looks like a new state budget may soon be approved. And of course, there was that internationally publicized compromise over pre-abortion ultrasounds that made it into law. But state legislators also okayed more than 1,000 other measures in their 2012 regular session. So of all of those, what did the Virginia General Assembly do that's most likely to affect you? Five state lawmakers, three Republicans, two Democrats, have agreed to help us figure that out this hour. Also on hand, analysis from the Washington Post's Anita Kumar and JMU's Bob Roberts. But if we are to do this right, it certainly would help to have your perspective. Your questions, comments, insights regarding the latest action coming out of the state capitol will be most welcome right after the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Pre-abortion ultrasounds, enhanced gun rights, new voter ID rules, significant change to government employee pensions, and, oh, by the way, no state budget yet. Those are the issues that have gotten the most publicity so far in response to this year's session of the Virginia General Assembly. A fact that Governor McDonnell went on national television recently to bemoan, saying media coverage has been missing the point of just how much other work has been getting done in recent weeks. So what do you think? What's been happening in the state capitol that concerns you? What issues would you like some clarification about? We expect to be speaking with at least five state legislators in the hour ahead. And if you've got questions for them, 888-WMRA-TALK is how to reach us by phone. Now, later in the program, Democratic State Senator Creed Eads and Republican State Senator Emmett Hanger have agreed to join in for just a few minutes apiece. And since they will be with us only briefly, it would be great if you have a question specifically for one of them. If you could get that question to us right now on our Facebook page, WMRA's Virginia Insight is how we are listed on Facebook. But if you've got a question that can be directed to any of our lawmaker guests, please feel free to call at 888-967-2825. Now, here with me in the Insight studio from Harrisonburg, Republican member of the Virginia House of Delegates, Tony Wilt, and from Rockbridge, Republican member of the House of Delegates, Ben Klein. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be with you.
Thank you, Tom.
Joining us via high-tech hookup from the studios of the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities in Charlottesville, Democratic member of the House of Delegates, and in fact, Democratic minority leader in the House, David Toscano. Mr. Leader, good to be speaking with you again, sir.
Great to be on. Best and, to my colleagues over there.
And just for balance, we also have two of our non-elected analysts with us, James Madison University Professor of Political Science Bob Roberts and Washington Post Virginia political reporter Anita Kumar.
Glad to be here.
Hi there.
Hey, Anita, first question to you.
Yes.
Three people walk into a bar. They've been out of state and away from all news media for at least the past 4.5 months. But now they're back home to their beloved Virginia. Somebody brings up politics. What do you think our three imaginary friends will be most interested to know about what's happened since the beginning of this year?
It's actually a tough question for me. I was thinking about this earlier, sort of what this session would be known for. And definitely the legislators will tell you about the bills that they got passed or didn't get passed. And I definitely think there were hundreds of bills that were passed. So there was, you know, definitely some significant changes. I think you mentioned pension reform. I think that's one of the most significant changes, whether you like it or not, that's come out of the General Assembly, also higher education funding. But I feel like, you know, the partisan attacks, I guess, if you will, over the last couple of months have sort of overshadowed those. In two ways, I think. One, the state Senate, I think we have no senators here at this time, but the Senate, which is split between Republicans and Democrats, had a hard time getting things done. And that's kind of unlike that chamber. There was a lot of back and forth and fighting. And then I guess the second thing is, you know, you mentioned the governor said this, whether this is right or wrong, there was a lot of attention paid to some social issues. You mentioned the ultrasound bill. There was some gun issues, some other things that really got a lot of attention and overshadowed some of these other bills that passed.
Bob Roberts, same question.
I think it's the perceived hostility between the Senate Democrats, Senate Republicans, House members, that it appears that people aren't getting along. Now, they're getting along fine here in the studio. But
So far. I mean, we're only five minutes into the show.
And then what struck me is that one of the major issues that was supposed to be addressed going into the session was transportation. That has become, we're seeing what's happening in Hampton Roads right now, the tremendous backlash against the contract that was entered into with a corporation down there to take care of the roads. The voters are just outraged down there. And that's a result of the inability of the legislature to reach some way, a long-term solution to transportation goals. And therefore, you came up with this very strange contract that is going to lead some voters, some residents down there, to pay as much as $1,000 a year more in tolls. That issue is, in most states, you've tried to come up with some long-term solution, and we just haven't been able to do it. And that's leading to these strange creations to try to deal with it on an ad hoc basis, which does not make the legislature look very good at all.
Okay, David Toscano, you're outnumbered 2-1 right now. And a little bit later in the program, we expect to be joined by one other Democrat briefly, but also one other Republican. So we're going to give a little extra oomph to your point of view and then let the Republicans beat up on you.
Oh, that sounds great. Well, you know, if we're gonna think about this session, trying to remember it from years from now, I think it's going to all be about the social overreach, particularly in the area of the ultrasound bill. There were 28 gun bills, most of which expanded people's ability to get guns and use them and take them in all kinds of places. And, you know, again, we cobble together these crazy patchwork solutions to transportation that ultimately get people more upset than ever before. 3 or 4 years ago, it was abusive driver fees that were woven in to a transportation package that had some elements in it, but no real money in it. This year, the governor tried to divert a portion of the sales tax revenue that otherwise would go to fund public safety and schools into transportation. That was a non-starter, and what we've got left are massive tolls in Hampton Roads and potentially in Northern Virginia to fund roads in those neck of the, in those areas of the Commonwealth, and naming rights for bridges, which are supposed to bring in a couple $1 million. So every year goes by, and we don't solve our transportation problems. They just seem to get worse and worse. I think people might be able to stomach tolls if it was part of a comprehensive solution. But when you're living in Hampton Roads and the only source of the roads being built are these really expensive tolls that you're going to be asked to pay, it doesn't sit well with folks. And I think you're going to see this backlash that Bob's talking about at some point, maybe next year in the polls.
So the Toscano Law Firm is not going to try and get a bridge named after it?
I don't have that kind of money. But, I mean, it is almost laughable if you think about it. I mean, naming rights for bridges. I can imagine where else we're going to go from here to fund the critical infrastructure that we need in the Commonwealth. There's got to be a better way to raise the revenue. The governor promised that he would provide a dedicated source of revenue. And where is it?
Ben, you're being awfully polite over there. You've been on the show enough times to know that you can join in, jump in at any moment. Want to make this the moment?
I'm happy to jump in at any time. I did want to give my good friend Dave a chance to expound on his take on the session. From my perspective and from House Republicans' perspective, and we'll see how my colleague Tony Wilt feels about it, but I think there's a general feeling on our part of success on focusing on the core functions of government. I think folks we talk to are most worried about jobs and the economy, and we focused very sharply on those issues, making sure that Virginia remains the best state in which to land a job or locate a business or raise a family. We passed a number of tax incentives and other programs related to agriculture and forestry, technology related to manufacturing, to keep employers here and to lure additional ones here to Virginia. So we're very proud of our record on jobs in Virginia, and we feel like we were successful again. It's kind of an unmentioned success. The one focus on social issues comes from the media primarily. You see the media focused on these issues. It's a very small part of
I wasn't going to do this, Ben, but you opened yourself up. I mean, really.
You led with it. You led with your intro.
And talking about the fact that the governor was criticizing the media, saying that we in the media have been totally missing the point. But you just mentioned focusing on core functions of government. Mm-hmm. Can you really tell me that transvaginal ultrasound probes are a core function of government? Or that if it hadn't gotten the laughable media, if you hadn't gotten Saturday Night Live making fun of this, it would have passed in its original form?
An ultrasound bill has passed the House of Delegates for many years.
That's correct.
It's been killed in the Senate
every time. That's correct.
This is the first year that the Senate actually passed it, and they passed it first,
right?
Which is what drew the attention of so many to the bill. It, for us in the House, it was one bill of over 1,000 bills that were introduced, and social issues made up a very small percentage of our agenda, but drew so much focus.
But the bill has a tremendous symbolic meaning to voters. If you look at the survey by down Christopher Newport University, that was done by their public policy center. There was significant opposition to that bill, and that was a good survey. And so what's really confounding, and I understand why the Republicans do it, is that with respect to overall voters in the state, it really turns off key swing voters. Where it may be good for the base of the Republican Party, passing such a bill does not help the Republican Party with key swing voting blocks. Those are the voting blocks will win or lose the presidential election. Those are the voting blocks that will win or lose the governor's race. Why do it?
Hey, Anita, can you hold on for a second?
In a sense, why do it?
Tony Wilt has been sitting here so quietly and patiently, and this is his first time on Virginia Insight.
No problem.
I got to ask, you want to jump in?
Well, I will, Tom. Thank you. I think it's important not to lose sight that, as we stated here earlier, that this issue that we're talking about didn't come up this year. It's an issue that's been alive for some years in the General Assembly. And for the most,
but everybody knew that it was never going to go anywhere as long as you had a Senate controlled by Democrats that wasn't going to allow it to pass.
Or respite.
Hey, Tom, this is David. You ought to let Tony finish, and then we'll lay into him.
I'm sorry. You're right, David. Very nice.
Thank you, Mr. Leader. And so it is an issue that's been alive for some period of time. And these issues, by and large, any of us legislators, we represent the ideals of our constituency. Delegate Toscano may represent different ideals than I will here in the Valley. But by and large, that mirrors the legislation that we carry forward. So even though we were the issue would die in past years in the Senate, we did see that opportunity and still mirror. I'm not going to carry an issue. I'm not going to carry legislation that is out of touch with my people. I'm going to try very hard not to. So I think it's important to realize that it was still an issue that's very important to a lot of folks here in Virginia, and that they wanted to see the action taken that we did.
Tom?
David.
This is David over here. You know, Tony makes a good point, and that point is that we all are elected from different areas and we represent different constituencies. And maybe after the jingle is done, maybe I can come back and talk about some other part of what he's talking about.
But I would love to have you do that. With us in the Virginia Insight studio, Republican from Rockbridge, Virginia Delegate Ben Klein, Republican from Harrisonburg, Virginia Delegate Tony Wilt, and James Madison University Politics Professor Bob Roberts. With us from a studio in Charlottesville, Democrat from Charlottesville and Minority Leader in the Virginia House of Delegates, David Toscano, plus our analysis from Anita Kumar and Bob Roberts, all continuing in 1 minute. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Grime. Hey, David, you had a thought you wanted to continue with there?
Sure. I think it is important for people to understand that everybody represents their constituency and they introduce whatever bill that they want. I think it's also important for people to understand that every time that somebody in power, in this case the governor of Virginia, doesn't like something that's being reported or doesn't like a bill that's being discussed, they blame the media. They should blame their own people who are introducing this legislation. And the final thing I want to say, and this is really important, this is not your typical ultrasound bill that we've seen every year in Virginia. The ultrasound bill that had been proposed this time around was much more intrusive than ever before. And the funny thing about it is when we got to the House floor, we told the Republican side, do you realize what this bill does? This bill requires an intrusive ultrasound, a penetration of a vagina, to get a good gestational age. And they said, oh, no, that's not what it means at all. Well, they hadn't really read the bill. And so they pass it willy-nilly without having read the bill. And then we came back and debated again.
David, now I'm going to interrupt you when you talk about passing willy-nilly.
You passed it with a block majority vote, and there was never, I don't think, one or two people out of your caucus voted against that bill. And then, all of a sudden, Governor McDonald decided he's running for president. I can't have this bill out there. And so he convenes a late-night meeting.
He's running for vice president, maybe.
Vice President,
yeah, okay.
He convenes a late night meeting and they come up with this other bill that they lay on us and ask us to vote on in about 10 minutes, which was really the old ultrasound bill. And now what we've got is a bill that requires women to have a procedure which isn't medically necessary anymore because it can't tell you the gestational age of a fetus. And they don't even pay for it, and we're not even sure insurance companies will pay for it because it isn't a medically necessary procedure.
Ben so Klein, really, I know that you know. I love it when you jump in. We've got another Democrat actually waiting for us on the phone line. But can you give me 30 seconds of your response to what David Toscano was saying?
Well, I'm not going to rehash the merits of the legislation, which is now law. It's been signed by the governor, and so it's—
But it's a modified version.
Right.
Of the original.
It has been modified to reflect the concerns expressed by the governor. Those were not passed willy-nilly. Those were considerations that were taken by the House and by the Senate very seriously. So we listened, we reacted, and we changed the bill accordingly.
888-WMRA Talk, 888-967-2825. If you want to join our conversation about the results of this year's Virginia General Assembly session, joining us now by phone from Bath County, Democratic State Senator Cree Deeds, whose district, by the way, stretches through parts of the Valley and up into Charlottesville. Senator, thank you for making time for us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
So, Cree, it kind of sticks in the back of my memory someplace that you were running for governor at one point, and you got blasted for repeatedly predicting that if your opponent, a guy by the name of Bob McDonald, got elected, that we would take a huge swing into social conservatism. Are you feeling at all justified these days?
Well, you know, it's not whether I'm justified or not. It's whether we move Virginia forward. You know, and we have things to do. There are people in Virginia that are hurting. The economy's recovering, but it's not recovering very fast. And it's not recovering in a way that is helping a whole lot of the people in the part of the state that I represent. So we still have a lot of work to do. And what happened in 2009 is past tense. You know, Bob, I've got a record that's pretty clear on those issues, and I'll be glad to talk about anything that happened this past session. But I'm not even thinking about 2009 right now.
One thing that has not happened so far is a budget. Are we going to get one?
I hope we get one before long. You know, whether it happens right next week or not is still uncertain. The budget that the conference report that came out is taking some positive steps in terms of education, the social safety net, but is still wholly inadequate with respect to transportation. Now we still have some talking to do to determine, you know, whether we're going to, you know, as a caucus stand together or whether, you know, there's a division of opinions that, with respect, as there isn't any group of people, with respect to what we're going to do, and there are still some things that I
he means they're going to lock Chuck Colgan in a closet.
Well, from my standpoint, you know, you can vote for the budget because there are some good things. You can vote against the budget because there's some bad things. Every budget's a compromise. The question is this enough of a compromise? Does this budget meet enough of Virginia needs to go forward with it? And there's a strong opinion within my caucus that it does not. So we just have to wait and see how it works out.
Anita Kumar, Ben Klein just made a passing remark about Sander Colgan, and right. Not everybody is going to get the joke. You want to explain what's going on there for us?
Sure. Senator Colgan, of a Democrat from Prince William County, has indicated, well, sort of indicated, that he may vote for the budget on Tuesday. And so if he does do that when they return, that should, if all the Republicans vote for it, be enough votes in the Senate to pass it.
Because right now the Senate is split 20-20.
Right.
And with the lieutenant governor's vote, that gives them...
Well, actually, the lieutenant, yes, correct, but the lieutenant governor cannot vote on the budget. And so they do need 21 votes for this to pass. I would assume that all Republicans are going to vote for it. And Senator Colgan had, he was one of the negotiators on the budget, and he did sign the agreement saying, he put a signature on it saying, you know, you can't hold it up for one or two things. And he said there were a lot of good things in this budget.
If he abstains, does it still pass? Well, he has to cast a vote.
Okay. Well, I mean, they need 21, right? So they need someone else.
Right.
Yeah.
Or a majority.
Janet didn't sign it, did she?
Excuse me?
Janet Howell didn't sign
Senator
it, did she?
Senator Howell did not sign it. So Senator Colgan was the only Democrat on the Senate side.
But I thought you needed a majority, and therefore, if he abstained...
Oh,
you
still, I see what you're saying.
You would still have a majority.
Oh.
Cree Deeds.
Yeah, you still have a majority of the right. members of the Senate who are on the Conference Committee because the majority are Republicans. Right. So you have a majority of the members of the Senate who were on the Conference Committee that signed the report. And you didn't even need Chuck Colgan's signature there.
No, you didn't need
right.
it.
Majority of the Republicans.
Right.
And they all signed it. Now, what happens on Tuesday is still up in the air. I mean, there's still a lot of discussion and a lot of time between now and Tuesday to see what happens. I don't know. I've talked to Chuck Colgan a couple of times. I got a lot of respect for him. I love Chuck Colgan. He thinks for himself. He's, you know, he's a World War II veteran, a member of the greatest generation, saved this world. I've got a world respect for him, and he's going to make up his own mind, just like all of us are.
Cree, if the budget doesn't pass and it goes back to the conference or wherever it goes back to, how can you reach a compromise?
We will get a budget before the end of June. We always do, we will. You know, I'm confident of that. And frankly, if the budget goes back to the conference, and a new conference may be appointed, who knows? You know, Ben and Tony and David and I are all available. We could serve on the next budget conference,
Cree,
for that matter.
Ben. I don't want to have to dodge my local government officials between now and June 30th, though.
Cree, I absolutely promised your staff that I would not keep you on the phone as long as we already have, as a matter of fact. So I got to let you go soon. But before you go, I got to ask if there's one thing that you want a chance to mention in relation to this recent General Assembly session that we haven't asked you about yet.
Well, you know, I haven't followed the whole discussion, so I don't know what you all have been talking about. It was interesting. This session was probably the least productive of the 21 I've been involved in sessions from that standpoint. But the most productive, individual effort I had was on a bill that Ben and I worked on together that didn't even pass. It allows the Rockbridge County landfill to stay open for a couple additional years. It will save a couple of million dollars for the Rockbridge area communities. And it's basically, we just, Ben and I leaned on DEQ and got them to look at it a little differently and allow the landfill to stay open. It was a very interesting session from that standpoint, but I was proud of some things we got accomplished.
Senator Cree Deeds, Democrat from Bath County. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Thanks to you.
Ben, you were smiling and nodding your head.
Hey, bipartisanship still survived in the General Assembly session on a number of things, and that was one of them. We saved our local government down in Rockbridge several hundred thousand dollars in trash trucking fees that they would have had to pay, but now their landfill gets to stay open.
Ben Klein and Tony Wilt, as well as David Toscano, are all members of the Virginia House of Delegates. Mr. Toscano, a Democrat, is minority leader in the House. Mr. Wilt and Mr. Klein are both members of the House's Republican majority. Bob Roberts, professor of politics and a professor of public policy at James Madison University, as well as Anita Kumar, who covers Virginia politics for The Washington Post, all with us on this edition of Virginia Insight. If you want to talk to any or all, we got some phone lines open at 888-WMRA-TALK. Next to Stanton. David, thank you for joining us. Your question or comment, please.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Just a little background. I'm 64 years old, native Virginian, as was my father, grandfather, and great-grandfather. Graduate of Virginia Tech, had a daughter at Virginia Tech. I got a number of things, but primarily it's the gun issue. I've seen in my lifetime the proliferation of these dangerous firearms, some of which were used to kill 32 people at Virginia Tech, and I see the influence of what I call the NRA firearms industrial complex influencing these laws such as the Castle Law and now the Stand Your Ground Law. And it's really disgusting to see what's the influence of the NRA and the gun lobby on our legislators. And to be honest with you, I hold any one of you folks who vote for easing these gun laws just as guilty of these deaths as the one who pulls the trigger. We need to do something about these guns, not have more guns and make it easier for people to get guns and use them.
David, we've got a pretty good handle on your perspective.
I'll hang up and listen.
Ben Klein, you were one of the ones who voted in favor of doing away with the one gun a month rule, so now people can buy as many guns at once as they want.
I did, and the one gun a month law, which was enacted back in the Wilder administration, was enacted to address, from what I am told, situations involving guns being moved up and down the East Coast.
Right.
And I think that from what we've seen, technology has taken such a leap forward in terms of background checks, eligibility to purchase firearms, that a lot of those concerns are not as prevalent as they once were. And the Second Amendment being one of the core freedoms that we enjoy as Americans, limits on those freedoms must be based in some kind of strong need. And when that need that was there in the 90s is now gone due to technology, we don't need the restrictions anymore.
The technology that you're talking about is the fact that you can go so much further, so much more quickly in terms of background checks.
Correct.
Yeah, but private...
Okay, so wait, okay. If you would, Bob, because Tony Wilt, this is your first time on Virginia Insight, and I realize that you know this is an NPR station, and you might be thinking that we only ever get callers who want to attack Republicans. I want to tell you that we actually do have a fair number of people whose political persuasion is conservative who are in the audience and who sometimes participate. And if you listening fit that bill and you'd like to say something from a conservative perspective, we certainly would be happy to hear from you, too, at 888-WMRA-TALK, 888-967-2825. Unfortunately, our next call's coming in from Charlottesville, and I'm not sure that we're going to get the conservative voice here. But Marianne, thank you for joining us. Your question or comment, please.
Hi, thank you. This is a question for the Republican side of the aisle about the ultrasound bill. I just wanted to make sure that I actually understand what happened. In order to tell gestational age, at the age that most people are having abortions, you have to have a vaginal ultrasound. So they couldn't do the vaginal ultrasound because it was invasive. So they've actually signed into law a procedure that is medically impossible?
Tony Wilt.
I'm sorry.
She's asking if what got signed into law is something that is medically impossible.
Yeah, I mean, because you can't tell gestational age from an external ultrasound.
Well, it's a procedure that Planned Parenthood orchestrates in their examinations and so forth that they already.
It sounds to me like maybe Marianne doesn't quite understand what the law that actually passed mm-hmm. does or requires. Ben, you want to explain?
She indicated that the transvaginal procedure was replaced with a what we call jelly on the belly.
Jelly on the belly.
And that, at very early stages, does not pick up as well as the transvaginal. Now, the bill still offers the transvaginal, but does not make it mandatory. So if there's an interest on the part of the mother in getting gestational age, more accurately, that transvaginal procedure is available. But
in essence, what the new law will say, it's been signed by the governor, so it is going into effect as the 1st of July. Is that any hold on just a second for me, if you would, Marianne. Any woman who wants to get an abortion in Virginia must first have an ultrasound.
That is my understanding of the law.
Okay.
Yes.
And that's all it says at this point, Marianne. It used to say something also about establishing gestational age, which in early pregnancies would have required that more invasive procedure, the transvaginal ultrasound. But that is no longer required.
Right. But what's required now doesn't work. If I'm 8 weeks pregnant and I want an abortion, you're not going to pick anything up on an ultrasound. So if you force me to have one against my will, and you don't even get the gestational age of the baby, how is this a reasonable law?
But Tom, a question I would have then, if you were, contemplating an abortion, would you want to move forward with that procedure not knowing that vital information for your own safety?
If I don't want to continue the pregnancy. I don't care how pregnant I am. I don't want to continue the pregnancy.
Wouldn't you want to know if it was a tubular pregnancy or some of those things that are vital to know in order to move ahead with that procedure? That was the intent of the law, for the safety of the woman as well.
Well, people would argue about what
this
the
is
intent
David
of the law is. If all you get is a jelly in the belly ultrasound, it doesn't tell you much about safety. And I think her point was that it's not medically impossible, it's just medically unnecessary. And I think the other point that people have forgotten is that this is one of the rare times, some people say it's the only time, I'm not sure it's the only time, but it's certainly one of the rare times where the legislature is telling doctors how to practice medicine, what procedures they have to use. That's that's a pretty intrusive thing. We're telling people to do things, and supposedly we want to give people the ability to practice their medical practice the way they think is right. We're now prescribing how they have to do it.
Joining us now on the phone line from Augusta County, Republican State Senator Emmett Hanger, whose district, by the way, stretches through much of the valley and then all the way up into Culpeper County. Senator Hanger, good to be speaking with you again, sir.
Yes, good to be on with you all.
And we've managed to get you on the phone line just before we're going to go to a break.
Okay.
So, you get to be the tease that's going to keep people listening. Give us 30 seconds of what you think was most important in this year's General Assembly session.
Well, the budget obviously was the overriding job that we had to do, and we still haven't finished.
So I guess the next question is going to be, what's the chance that when the General Assembly comes back into session next Tuesday to vote on a budget, you think we're actually going to get one? And we'll ask you that question when we continue here on Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. With me in the Virginia Insight studio, Republican from Rockbridge, Virginia Delegate Ben Klein, Republican from Harrisonburg, Virginia Delegate Tony Wilt, as well as James Madison University politics professor Bob Roberts. With us from a studio in Charlottesville, Democrat from Charlottesville and minority leader in the Virginia House, David Toscano, and from her desk at the Richmond offices of the Washington Post, political reporter Anita Kumar, as well as now joining us just before the break, Republican Senator from Augusta County, Emmett Hanger. Emmett, Tuesday, you go back to Richmond with 39 other senators and 100 members of the House of Delegates. We already know the House of Delegates is going to approve this compromise budget. What's going to happen in the Senate?
Well, I expect that we will approve it, and I would hope that it won't be marginally passed. I would hope that you know, obviously there are a couple issues still outstanding that we need to address. But overall, I think we have an extremely good budget. It actually improved after we went back and revisited it in trying to make it a completely bipartisan budget. And so I would hope there are going to be most of the Republicans, and I would like to see most of the Democrats support it.
Anita Kumar, you have a question about that by any chance?
Well, I just, hi, Senator. I was just wondering, I mean, you sound pretty sure that it's going to pass. As we were discussing earlier before you were on, that there's still, you know, that's still in doubt. But as you know, we spoke when you all came up with the conference committee. And for those who don't know it, there's sort of one big project that's kind of out there that's the, you know, that's the problem in this situation is basically this money for Metro Rail to Dulles International mm-hmm. Airport in Northern Virginia. And my understanding is that's not changing. There's no additional money. So I guess I'm wondering if you think it's going to pass. I saw the Speaker of the House earlier today. He said he was absolutely confident it would pass. So I was wondering what you thought.
Well, I wouldn't use that term, but I think that it should pass overwhelmingly. And I hope we have time between now and next Tuesday when it's in front of the Senate to adequately address with all the membership what we're hung up on now, because we have addressed virtually all of the issues that the Democrats raised, and many of them were legitimate issues. It was a matter of priority in terms of rearranging our spending priorities. But the one issue remaining is a regional issue, and it's an important issue. And I think we really minority leader, or Dick Saslaw, the senator from Fairfax, senior senator from Fairfax, seems determined to cause his caucus to be very partisan and hold the line on this vote. But the truth of the matter is, unless you're from Northern Virginia and just want to make a statement, it would be foolish for other Democrats to follow his lead on this one. The issue is there had been a proposal for $300 million additional dollars for the Silver Line Phase 2, which extends from Dulles on out into Loudoun County, which I supported, and I helped it get out of the Senate initially, and I helped in conference trying to get that funding. But the truth of the matter is, that funding is not needed until after this biennial budget. So the real issue is funding for transportation. And I certainly have pledged to Dick and Janet Howe, the two senators, and Chuck Colgan that were involved with these conferences, that I will work to see that we get additional funding so we can not only fund phase two of that corridor for the Silver Line, but also fund some other critical projects around the state.
In the other chamber, in the other party, is Democrat Minority Leader David Toscano. David, are you going to vote for this conference report budget compromise?
Well, I have to see all the specifics of it and hear some more of the discussions about how important some of these transportation initiatives are and how quickly they have to be done. What Senator Hanger has pointed out is really important, and that is that the Dulles project is, I think it's maybe the biggest economic development project going on in the Commonwealth of Virginia, certainly, and it may be one of the biggest ones going on in the country right now. And it's important that people in that neck of the woods don't have to pay too much in tolls to ride the road and that's going to help fund the extension of the Dulles Rail. And I think that's the issue up in Northern Virginia. We don't hear too much of it down in our neck of the woods, but it's really an important issue there.
Right.
Beyond that, there's the issue in Hampton Roads with the tunnels and the tolling process there and the contract by which the private developer is going to build that toll, those projects, and then collect the tolls. That's gotten people down there incensed. And I think what it raises is a broader question. I think Senator Hanger has talked about this a lot in the past, and that is, you know, we need a broad-based approach to raising revenue to solve our transportation problems. And what's happening instead is we've got these sort of balkanized solutions which install tolls in areas that force people who live there to pay a lot of money to for these road improvements. And we lose track of the fact that we're a commonwealth and that the folks in Northern Virginia, to the extent the economic development occurs there, is helping people in the Valley, helping people in Charlottesville, because it helped raise tax revenues around in that part of the area part of the state that comes down to help us with our schools and with our roads. And so we can't neglect other parts of the Commonwealth. We have to figure out a way for a broad-based
approach. You're sitting over there. It's so polite. If you don't jump in, we're not going to get to you.
Well, I think that David raises good points, and I think that for the economy of the Charlottesville area, it's all the more important that we build that bypass on 29. And so I think we do need some transportation funding down our way to address the transportation issues down our way. So,
and that's an interesting point you raised there, too, because David should be concerned because Senator Saslaw, on the last day of conference, tried to get us to take the money off the Western Bypass and put it on the Dulles Rail. So that's the kind of fights we're going to get into unless we come up with adequate money to pay for all these projects.
Okay, Emmett, but I also promised your staff that I would not keep you on the phone for more than a few minutes. So one last question. You and David Toscano have actually, if I understand correctly, worked together on some environmental issues in the past. Is there something on your environmental agenda that went well, Senator Hanger, this year?
Well, reasonably well. We had initially, I had sponsored a bill along with Senator Watkins to basically pay the state's portion of all of our wastewater treatment plant upgrades or finish that off. We've already paid quite a bit, and it would have taken about $300 million. What we ended up getting was about $87 million, but in cash, not bonds, in cash, in a very tight budget to accomplish that. So that's going to be good news for a lot of these local governments that have already made commitments or have already upgraded their wastewater treatment plants and are waiting on checks from the state for that share. In addition, you know, with our work, we're kind of under a lot of scrutiny these days with our efforts to clean up the Chesapeake Bay. We restored some critical funding for the Soil and Water Conservation District so they can do their job with the water quality improvement plan that we're having to produce to conform to the EPA standards, and also carried some legislation this year that was my partner on that was Delegate Sherwood from up in Winchester to basically reorganize our stormwater management plans, which I think will pay big dividends in the long run in terms of making it less onerous for developers and for local governments and less costly to administer. But more importantly, more efficient in getting sediments out of the stream flow.
Senator Emmett Hanger, Republican from Augusta County. Always good to talk to you, sir. Thanks so much for making time for us.
Well, thanks so much. I appreciate y'all making time for me.
We have a few more minutes to take calls from listeners at 888-WMRA-TALK, 888-967-2825. We're going to go next to Madison. I believe this is Carolyn or Caroline?
Caroline.
Caroline, thanks for calling in. Your question, your comment, please.
I think this most recent conversation that your guests have had has been very enlightening. I'm an independent voter, and I was horribly disappointed at this session and the results of this session. And but I didn't hear much about the last things that they had commented on, for example, the environmental efforts. So I'm very glad to hear that. My question is about the Stand Your Ground bill and how Virginia's differs from Florida. I am aware that the Virginia Commonwealth Attorneys Association opposed the bill, and I'd like to know how what was enacted compares to Florida's.
Well, we actually have in the studio someone who's not only a member of the House of Delegates, but also is an assistant Commonwealth's attorney, Ben Klein.
No pressure. Well, from my understanding of the Stand Your Ground law, it is in code and says that you it's a defense against the killing of someone who is in the process of attacking you in some way.
But there was a proposal this year.
There was Castle Doctrine.
Kind of, yes, expanded that, and that was defeated.
We had two bills. One was
what's withdrawn?
One was civil and one was criminal. Ultimately, they were withdrawn because we have what's called common law in Virginia, which already through case law, the judges have already ruled that that's the law in Virginia, essentially.
But the law in Virginia essentially is, if somebody invades my home and I feel threatened, then I have a right to respond with proportional force.
Right. And unlike Florida, it's only in your home. It's not stand your ground in Florida applies outside.
But how
of
the proposal would
else.
Have changed the law, if I understand correctly, Ben, in Virginia is it would have ended up, if this had passed, that if somebody invades my home, I can shoot them no matter what.
The question was whether there was a threat of serious bodily injury or simply bodily injury.
Right.
And we got into discussions about Girl Scouts throwing boxes of cookies and whether that was justification for
right.
use of deadly force. Of course not. It
so
would not be.
David Toscano, in essence, the law did not change in Virginia this year.
Right. No, but it came awfully close. And what happened, you know, this shows some of the internal dynamics of the General Assembly. If I'm not mistaken, and Ben probably can comment on this because he's closer to it than I am, but if I'm not mistaken, the NRA supported a change in the Castle Doctrine in Virginia, and it was one of their priorities. But that some of the other gun rights advocates said, oh, wait a minute here, we don't want to change what we think is a pretty good common law practice. And those folks ultimately won out, and the bill was essentially withdrawn right. because the more conservative gun rights groups said, we don't like this. Now, I don't know, Ben, you might want to comment on that, but that's my understanding. At least that's what I'd heard.
I think that's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Caroline, for your call. I think we have time for one more. We're going to Barbersville next. This is Melissa. Thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please, for any of these people, Delegates David Toscano, Ben Klein, Tony Wilt, Politics Professor Bob Roberts, and or Washington Post reporter Anita Kumar. Go.
Hi.
Hi.
I guess I was calling because you had asked for some more conservative voices to speak up.
I know they're out there, and it sounds like you might be one.
Well, for the record, I happen to be pro-choice, but I think that the entire fight for the, if you believe that that collection of cells is actually a life, then that's something worth fighting for. And I think the other side has a very respectable position to be taken. And the callers often do not represent that. They're just incredulous that someone would spend their time and effort on such a topic. And even you, Tom, mentioned, can you honestly say that this is a real function of the government? Well, yes, if you feel like you're protecting a life, then that's absolutely worthy of fighting for, even though I happen to be pro-choice, and I hope they fail.
Tony Wilt.
Well, I would agree that with the caller that these are, again, as I stated at the top of the program, I mean, these are issues that are ongoing, and I think they warrant the due diligence that we give them, and that you know, those issues we continue to discuss and debate and to see where we come out on which side of the issue. And I think it was given due diligence, and I think it was well worth the time. That's what we're here for, bottom line.
Melissa, thanks so much. I think we do have time for one more. This is Nikki in Powhatan. You're on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please, Nikki. We lost Nikki. Okay. Anita Kumar, long time ago,
yes,
we talked about how bad the media was misbehaving, and you wanted to respond to that.
Well, we don't have to get back to it now, but since you brought it up, I just will point out, I mean, the comment I think earlier was that, you know, the media, the Washington Post, as well as other media here in Richmond, paid attention to certain bills. We've been talking about one of them, the ultrasound bill, because there was some reason. I can't even remember now what the reason was, because, you know, it's been introduced several times, and why did we pay attention to it this year? And so I guess I just wanted to respond to that, which is a couple things. One, we paid attention to it this year, obviously, because, as we indicated, it looked like it was going to pass, and which in prior years it wasn't. But more importantly, the governor, and I reported on this extensively, he had said he would sign a bill, and then he changed his mind. I know they dispute that. They said they didn't know the details of the bill. But that actually put it really in a, you know, his actions on a bill that specifically, that publicly, you know, put it out there for us. The other difference is, and this was my fifth session, I believe, here in Virginia, I've never seen that many protesters before. There's another protest scheduled for this month. And so, yes, you know, when there are hundreds, thousands of people on Capitol Square grounds, yeah, we pay attention to that.
Okay, Bob Roberts, we have 40 seconds left for you to sum this all up, whether you want to talk about the media or anything else to do with this year's General Assembly session.
I think it was tied directly to presidential politics. In other words, it was tied to, it was a much broader agenda out there. And the mistake I think the Republicans made, a serious mistake, was that the Democrats were really down in this state. They were depressed. They didn't think they had, you know, where to go. And they gave them a number of issues to mobilize their base. And the Democratic base is more mobilized than I've seen in probably 10 years.
And, it didn't, and I know all
and
of you have a response
have
to,
happen. To
that idea, so
and
we're going
to have
you
to happen.
Back to suggest other paradigms.
I'll hold my tongue until next time.
Our guests have been from the Charlottesville studios of Virginia Foundation for the Humanities, the minority leader in the House of Delegates, Charlottesville Democrat David Toscano.
Thank you.
Here in the Insight Studios, Republican members of the House of Delegates, Rockbridge County's Ben Klein, and the city of Harrisonburg's Tony Wilt, as well as James Madison University Professor of Politics Bob Roberts. And with us by phone, Washington Post political reporter and Charlottesville native, Anita Kumar. Thank you all for making time for us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you. You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on programs, and then clicking on Virginia Insight. Thanks for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more Insight.